Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Computer Weekly Dantheim Upload Podcast. Today's guest is David Glick from Walmart. Thanks for coming on the show today, David. To get things started, I'd like to ask you, how has your career journey helped you take on your current role at Walmart?
Thanks for having me. Start by sharing my current role is leading enterprise business services, which is all the things that support our associates every day. When you turn on your laptop, that's part of enterprise business service. When we close the books every quarter, that's part of enterprise business services. And when we pay our associates, that's part of enterprise business services. So I like to, you know, indicate that we are very involved with our associates' lives on a daily basis.
So you're like the big sort of IT department that looks after everyone at Walmart.
Yes, we lead all the technology that takes care of our associates.
Wow. So, but you've obviously you've been at Walmart for a few years. What have you sort of learned in, you know, as a tech expert, I guess it would be good to talk about how you got to where you got to. But generally, the different jobs that you've had, I mean, people obviously move between different positions as they progress their career. What's been some of the things that you have taken away in the different roles you've had that have led you to where you are today?
Sure. I started at Amazon 25 years ago in infrastructure, setting up fulfillment centers. It was funny because nobody wanted to set up fulfillment centers because supply chain wasn't cool 25 years ago. And yes, interestingly, 25 years later, it is. I was in what you call hardcore IT infrastructure. About 5 years after that, as AWS came along and the other cloud providers, we saw that as not a growth field, but software, writing software was a growth field. At that time, I got the opportunity to move from infrastructure to software. And the boss who hired me said, I have lots of people who can write code. What I need is people who can get things done. That always stuck with me. And so I made that transition into automating systems at Amazon to order inventory, to set prices and things like that. And while we were doing that for retail, the idea of automating things, driving adoptions, setting up audits so that the automation, we were sure that it worked. That works in retail, it works in operations, and it works in enterprise business services.
It's well ahead of its time to think that, Computer Weekly was not writing about automation in the early 2000s. It might have been, but it was not called automation. Not like today where, I think everything I get in my inbox is automate this, AI that, that does seem a sort of very forward-thinking approach.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, 20 years ago, there were internet companies and e-commerce companies. Now, today, you'd never consider someone an internet company, right? They're just a company. And I think what we're seeing today is there are a lot of companies who are calling themselves AI companies. And in 10 years, we won't have AI companies and non-AI companies. Every company will have AI weaved in some way, and so it'll just be a company.
Yeah, I know this is not one of the questions that we were going to discuss, we are going to talk about AI definitely, but this is just my observation, just from, again, the information I see coming into Computer Weekly's mailbox. Every software company is doing something with AI. AI is embedded in what they do. A few years ago, it was around automation. Now it's around AI. It was around cloud as well. Everything was cloud a few years ago. Everything is cloud now. And this is just where the enterprise software market appears. As an outsider seeing what's going on, it seems that's the way the industry is heading. But I want to move on to question two, which is, in the past, many traditional retailers have failed to grasp the full potential of e-commerce. And I know you just mentioned that every company, we're not differentiating between, you know, internet commerce, you know, internet companies and the like. But, you know, there was this thing in, you know, the Y2K era that, you know, there was the e-commerce big bang and all of that, and everything fell apart. But what excites you about how Walmart is approaching traditional retail and e-commerce?
Sure. One of the keys to e-commerce is that you have to have inventory close to customer. And Walmart is within 10 miles of 90% of people, 90% of households in the U.S.
Yes.
So we fundamentally have inventory close to customers in the store. The challenge is, how do we use an omni-channel approach? So Walmart's a people-led, tech-empowered omni-channel retailer. And one of the few folks who actually integrated physical bricks and mortar with our e-commerce site through BOPIS, buy online, pick up in store, and through home delivery from the stores.
Yes.
And so that, I think, makes us unique in our ability to serve customers across the globe.
And I mean, has that, I know you've only been there a few years, but I guess it is constantly evolving. We write about, you know, the customer experience, the end-to-end customer experience. So, you know, what the customer sees, they don't want to see the back-end system. They don't want to have to deal with, things are broken and I have to deal with three or four different people to solve a particular problem or to get my delivery.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things is we have many folks who are Walmart customers, and a few years ago they'd never shopped online. And the online retailers were sort of foreign to them. So bringing the trust that they have in Walmart and the simplicity of our app has allowed us to really gain share with those customers who enjoy sometimes going to the store, but sometimes have things brought to their door, and sometimes sitting in the parking lot while we load it directly into their cars.
I mean, I know this is not like, you know, one of those, it's more your opinion on this, you know, rather than a sort of a question that you'd have a direct answer. But I mean, anecdotally, I've noticed that it's been very much a younger generation thing. And I'm not sure how things are different between the US and the UK, but is an older demographic, are older people making more use of online? Just your perspective on it, your view. You know, would your parents be able to shop online? I know my mother would find it very difficult. That's my personal experience.
Yeah, you know, we like to meet customers where they are, whether that's online, whether that's in store, and you know, sometimes they're online in the store. You know, one of the things that I'm super passionate about here with Enterprise Business Services is taking care of our associates.
Yes.
And so in addition to taking care of our customers, which our associates do, we want to take care of our associates. And so we've built a consumer-grade application which allows our associates to clock in the stores, to submit expense reports, to even order food at the cafeteria, as well as having an AI assistant built into it.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because it leads me on to one of my questions. It's not the questions that are in the order that I was going to originally ask them, but how are modern trends in IT influencing the technology decisions that you make and wider within Walmart as well?
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, in many big companies, you'd go out, you'd figure out what your problem is, and you'd go out and buy off-the-shelf shrink-wrapped software, and you hire some consultants to integrate it.
Yes.
More and more at Walmart scale, those off-the-shelf solutions don't work at the scale we need to. And so 4 years ago, we brought in Suresh Kumar, who's a technology leader who'd been at Google and Microsoft and Amazon before this, and started to build the practice of building software in-house rather than an RFP and bringing a third-party software in. Just because at the scale of Walmart, we need to be able to customize exactly what we need, and it needs to be resilient and up 100% of the time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, talking about the in a hiring a tech leader from one of the big tech firms. These big internet companies, the tech giants, they seem to have a reputation for hiring the top talent. And I just wanted to ask you, where do you think, just for our readers, how do you go about looking for tech talent? How can you attract these people into your own organization? And how does Walmart do this?
Yeah, you do it in a variety of ways. At the lower levels, you have recruiters who are looking at LinkedIn and doing searches. Mm. As you move to more senior folks, you look at your network. And that can be people you've worked with in the past or people they know who've referred them or just people you've met over the years through LinkedIn and other conferences. I've met many amazing people and built a great network of some of the best talent in the world. Hmm. And, some of those are from West Coast high tech firms and some of those are from, from Bentonville, Arkansas.
Yes. I think I just want to drill down a little bit further on that. It's not that... any sort of company that's been longstanding and traditional is going to be a boring place to work. But what the likes of Google and Apple and Microsoft are able to do is somehow instill this thing that they are the most exciting place to work. Go on.
For people who love technology and who love operations, in the physical world and love taking care of customers, you can't beat Walmart. We're the biggest retailer, the biggest company in the world. Mm. We have a 25,000 person strong technology team. And so we are big tech. And so when you say Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, you should put Walmart right in there as well.
Okay. that's interesting, isn't it? And I guess in operations, in terms of IT operations, it is, I guess it's one of those skills that people don't really appreciate as much until they're doing it, until you understand that without it, you don't get your new software running anyway. It's never going to be deployed, right? And the hardware is not going to be put out there. So,
I would say this, we mentioned Google, Microsoft, others, they have these consumer presences, but the consumers they never see, and it's all bits in the ether. Mm. At Walmart, we are actually interacting with customers every single day. Our technology is used by millions of associates every day. And so if you want to be able to see tangible things and work with your consumers and work with your associates, you can't beat Walmart for that.
Okay, I just want to move on a bit and ask you about some of the technologies that you feel, given that you say that Walmart is like one of the biggest tech firms, right? It's up there with Apple and Walmart and Google and the like in terms of what it does with technology. What new technologies do you feel are the ones we should be watching? And how do you think they will change how IT is built, deployed and operated in the future?
Yeah, obviously everybody's talking about generative AI right now. Mm. We've taken a two-pronged approach in my organization. One of the things we want to do is go from the top down and say, let's pick an application and see how it goes. And so we're working on an application to help our benefits help desk agents to augment their experience by listening to the questions and helping them with the answers when people call in with benefits questions. The way I think about it is, who's better to memorize a 300-page benefits guide? Mm. Is it a computer or is it a person? But also, we want to do a bottoms-up. We're basically crowdsourcing ideas for generative AI by launching My Assistant in our app. And My Assistant is basically a box where people can use Gen AI in a safe and IP protected way to do whatever they want. And we can monitor those queries and monitor what they use it for. And that will tell us what are the things that are important to our users. And that will lead us to building those functionality more purpose built.
I just want to follow up on that, David, if I may. You mentioned it's sort of the intellectual property safe way of doing this. Now, the I mean, the cloud providers all offering generative AI in the cloud, right? So your IP gets shifted up there. Presumably, you mean that is not happening at Walmart.
Yeah, and you know, over time, the cloud providers will have to come up with a solution which protects people's IP out of the box. But we're right at the cutting edge of generative AI, so we're working very closely with both of our cloud providers to make sure that between what we have in guardrails and what they're doing, none of our IP leaks into the public domain.
Mm. I mean, it's related to my next question, this actually, but I was going to ask you about the risks beyond the things that you've mentioned.
Obviously, security and protecting our IP are super important. Mm. You know, we work with the cloud providers as well as our own in-house stack for generative AI. But it's paramount for us that our user data, our customer data, and our generally our IP stays within our firewall and isn't used to train others' data sets. Mm. And so we spend a lot of time figuring out how to do that.
Yeah, I mean, just want to drill down a tiny bit on this. Given what the industry is also recognizes that you can't just push things into the public cloud and, I mean, and use generative AI. Although they may let you do that, it's not advisable, right? Are you actually having to build everything, you know, effectively behind in your own network behind the firewall?
Effectively, I mean, we work closely with our cloud providers, or I guess people say hyperscalers.
Yes.
And, you know, some of what we're running is our own GPUs and our own data centers, some with our cloud partners. But we work very closely when we work with our cloud partners to make sure that it's behind our firewall, even if it's in their data center.
Mm. I'm sorry to bring this up, but I'm going to ask one of those boring IT questions that I think every IT leader tends to get asked at some point, because we've just been talking about some really exciting cutting edge stuff. But one of the things that never goes away is legacy IT, and even stuff that, again, I mean, I'll bring back when I first started on Computer Weekly. You know, we were working on stories that looked at Y2K. That's how long I've been at Computer Weekly, by the way, and how companies were moving to client-server computing over the mainframe because of the date issue, the date bug. Now, it's like 25 years on, right? You know, the client-server computing has gone through many evolutions to you know, different types of technology has been used, but that's now legacy because we're now in the cloud era. You know, the hyperscalers are pushing forward a new way of thinking about IT, cloud native and things like that. You know, there's the exciting stuff, but you also have this, as you build things, it becomes stuff that has to be maintained long term. I'm just really interested in Walmart's approach to that. The whole application lifecycle, I guess, is probably a nicer way to put it.
Yeah, when Suresh Kumar joined Walmart 4 years ago, set out to fix the foundation of technology at Walmart. And so we've spent a large amount of engineers and dollars on moving off of the mainframe into the cloud or into our own on-premises cloud. Mm. You mentioned cloud native. We actually have a platform called the Walmart Cloud Native Platform, which we use to abstract away which cloud we're on or if we're on a mainframe or anything else, so that we can deploy software quickly, and we that's allowed us to move much more quickly with advancing our technology.
Okay. I've got one final question. It's sort of, we've gone quite deep into a technology rabbit hole, and we've gone through a few of these, but finally, just moving right at the top and as a sort of high level, you know, business manager type thing, but what advice would you give to IT managers and CIOs, IT leaders, IT directors, given the current cost of living and the constraints on the technology budget, there's a lot going on, and you know, businesses do want to evolve their technology stack, and they do want to automate stuff as well, but there's also this fact that, you know, you need people with the right skills. What generally do you, I mean, in terms of just your general thoughts on how you can take the people along, the internal software people and operations, IT operations people along on that journey?